Ben Coleman.
I think Bob kind of covered it. You know, we've also been inspected in Chile, as an example, just to give a sense of it. I just wanted to make a couple points that maybe just being, I know Appendix K is tough for a lot of people in the room. We've lived through it. It's a little bit for the foreign private issuers. I mean, Appendix K, remember, when you read Appendix K in 2.2, it focuses on the differences between the auditing standards in your local country and the U.S. And Sam made the point with respect to what's accepted in the States, right? So when you get into this, you just, to the point that was made by Cynthia, I mean, no matter what, it needs to be updated because the world is different today than it was then. I mean, that's just a simple fact. And I think that fact absolutely needs to be dealt with. The other thing when you're talking about resources that I think we have to keep in mind is, if anybody, and I don't have the latest analysis, but the number of foreign private issuers that are registered in the United States has decreased recently. And I think that model cannot be not understood as you're thinking about Appendix K, because it happens to be a fact. Going around, are procedures similar to what both Bob and Sam said? When you think about the auditing, and so we'll leave the accounting off, when you think about the auditing and the independence, the base for what we have here are the international standards and then added to them. So both for independence and with respect to auditing, we've already gone there on a global basis. All right? That's not where we were back in 1999. So therefore, when the inspectors come in, both in the local country and here in the States, what they're doing is very different than what they would have done in 1999. In addition, when they look at our system of internal controls and procedures, similarly, they're going to look at it, including our inspection process, all right, and the results of our inspection process on a global basis, which also includes what Bob talked about with respect to the efficacy of the people's knowledge with respect to both U.S. GAAP and the auditing and independent standards. But they are global standards, and it is run that way now. Very different than it was back in 1999. So there is a cost-benefit ratio of this. I mean, by all means, I mean, last thing we want to do is do work that at an additional cost. It is a third check, right? And there are other protections for investors that have been now put in place. So really what you have is all those other things have been put in place and something that's never really been updated that's an incremental cost that I think you could challenge the benefit on the non-accounting side. When you go to the efficacy of the accounting and U.S. GAAP is still utilized, that really has continued value, and it had the value from 1999 all the way to today of really, particularly when organizations were adopting IFRS and the challenge of, well, why is that a reconciling item from U.S. GAAP back to IFRS? It was a very, very valuable discipline over the last couple of years.
David Becker.
I think it's not true that auditors outside the United States can't be sued for improper audits of foreign private issuers. One can get jurisdiction over them, and I would think that folks who represent shareholders in this type of litigation have the incentive to do that. I can tell you we do a lot of work for lots of foreign private issuers, and I can tell you that the audit, the local audit firms, and not just their U.S. Partners in the network, are quite conscious of threats of both enforcement activity and private litigation in the United States, particularly in those places where foreign private issuers are principally located, being Canada, Israel, United Kingdom, Germany. To the extent the concern is that there are a whole bunch of foreign auditors out there not auditing with the same degree of anxiety that U.S. auditors audit, I just don't think it's true.
Sam Ranzilla.
Well, I don't believe our firm in Chile has been inspected, and I'm sure they're feeling very left out. We too have a credentialing system in our global organization for U.S. GAAP, similar to what Bob described, and I think similar to what most of the large firms have. But before you can get on a particular engagement, and we code them by A, Bs, and Cs based on the nature of the engagement and the risk assessment around the engagement, you know, there are certain training and experience requirements you have to have met. Similarly, in the maybe front run where we're headed a little bit later, we have the same exact credentialing system here in the United States for IFRS. So if you're asked to do to participate on an audit of a European company, gets designated a risk assessment, and you have to have certain training and experience requirements to function as the partner or the manager on that account, even though you may not be necessarily signing any auditor's reports other than within the global organization. So, again, I think those are things, as Bob mentioned, especially on the U.S. GAAP side, those are new since 1999. To answer Joe's question about inspections, as it relates to foreign private issuers, we have a separate inspection system that is run by the International Risk Management Group and includes bringing in inspectors that have U.S. GAAP expertise, which primarily, not primarily, but to some great degree, is people coming from the U.S. to do specifically a review of a foreign private issuer to comply with this item B in Appendix K. So I don't know if it's more rigorous or not, but it's special. It's looked after by our international organization, but draws heavily on U.S. resources in order to accomplish it. And my guess is it has maybe a tighter deadline with respect to how often a company or a partner who functions in that role might be inspected as it relates to a foreign private issuer.
Lynn Turner.
When Appendix K was originally done, we'd actually seen, and what really drove us to go back to the practice section at the time on it, was we'd actually seen a large telecom down in South America come in and list with us, and the financial statements said they've been audited in accordance with U.S. GAAP and U.S. auditing standards, and yet they didn't appear to even be remotely close. And we called up the national office of Sam's firm at the time and found out they weren't even aware of it, weren't even aware of the filing, hadn't ever seen it. And as a result, then that telecom had to go back through a major restatement. It took a lot of time on the firm's part. When the national office did get involved, they did a great job and got things where they needed to be. But nonetheless, something had come in and could have very well gone through the cracks that would have cost investors a very, very serious problem, because it's a large telecom getting privatized. And so we went back to the practice section. We said, let's put something in place so we know there's a gatekeeper, so the SEC doesn't have to be the gatekeeper on each one of these. And the firms agreed to do that and came up with a kind of a give and take on the negotiations and came up with K. So Appendix K was designed to be put in place to make sure that there was someone in the firm that was gatekeeping these and making sure that they were getting done and done right. And as that went in place, there was no question in the national offices of the firm, they started doing a much better job of putting things in place, notwithstanding the fact we still continued. I actually think K does give investors in the United States some assurance that whoever's auditing, and even if they're in IFRS, it's still supposed to be done in accordance with U.S. auditing standards. And there has been problems at the Commission from time to time with the quality of audits being done in accordance with those standards. And certainly we've seen cases led by probably Learnout and Houseby and Parmalat and others where there's been problems with the auditing standards. We've also seen time and time again some questions raised. It's an ongoing battle as to whether or not those firms are really complying with the independent standards over here. And the only way you really probably get that, I've talked to people in the national offices, several of the firms that deal with the independence issues, and they tell me they still have to knock their head against the wall trying to ensure independence today. And then you say, well, the audits are all being done okay over there. But here just a year ago, we had the Japan regulator go in and totally shut down one of the big four firms. Apparently, they thought it was bad enough that they wiped out a firm. So in light of that, I'd have serious questions as to whether or not you really are getting those that quality. I do have a lot of trust in the four guys sitting in their offices sitting around the table here, but I'm not sure that I'd turn around, and especially in light of what we saw in Japan, would turn that over to some foreign office. And certainly the firms themselves have had concerns because they've all set up offices in London or wherever where they send some very talented people from here in the U.S., Sam sent Mary Tokar and the likes over there just to help police this stuff. And you talk to those people, and they'll tell you they beat their heads against the wall trying to make sure that things get done. So you take that gatekeeping, that safeguard out of the system and remove Appendix K, then you open it back up, I think, to what we've had in the past. And I think what the PCAOB really needs to focus on is, do you have a real functioning, honest-to-goodness quality control system in place that ensures those international audits are coming in here and getting done right? And it's not so much Appendix K or whatever as it is, do you have that quality control built in someplace that ensures that you can hold those people accountable to? And I'd say, especially in light of what we saw in Japan, you haven't got that yet.
Let's continue our discussion with the next question on the Appendix K. If the SEC were to remove the U.S. GAAP reconciliation requirement for those foreign private issuers that currently prepare their financial statements in accordance with the International Financial Reporting Standards, what changes, if any, would be needed for Appendix K? Bob Kippers?
Greg, sorry, I was just going to come back on Lynn's point. It's related, though. Lynn, nobody said it was easy. To your points. But I think one of the worries is that, you know, be careful not to over rely on Appendix K as a particularly effective way to enhance quality. In our firm, at least, anybody coming into the U.S. market to raise money or have files a 10K that they think will then be used in, you know, shelf type, you know, used in a future filing for exchange offer or whatever. That goes through our National Office SEC group with a very, very detailed review of the filing. And, of course, that today includes the reconciliation. If I had to say, would I rather do that or do Appendix K, I actually feel that our people that, you know, for a living all day long look at U.S. filings and look at foreign filings are probably more effective in many ways than Appendix K. The only difference is, in part, that Appendix K requires a conversation with the engagement team around certain things. But, you know, I'm just suggesting that, you know, we probably spent more time than it deserves, I'm just not convinced it's still necessary. But, I mean, this is not a do-or-die issue for the firms. We're just trying to look at in totality of all the changes that have come. And, you know, you'll have to take all the input you're getting and decide what to do with that because it is now part of your transitional standards.
Other comments? Well, due to some time constraints, let's move ahead to the next question. The last question in this on this particular topic, what auditing issues might arise if the SEC removed the U.S. GAAP reconciliation requirement for those foreign private issuers that prepared those financial statements in accordance with the international standards? What would any other amendments or additions to the PCAOB standards be necessary? Galen Hansen?
I've been sort of sandbagging a little bit. I want to express some dissent, maybe some contrarian opinion on this entire area, and I've kind of been waiting until these questions came up. I have I ended up responding to the SEC's proposal on removing the reconciliation, as well as is really the concept release that they put out. And you know, it's been said here earlier that a compelling case can be made for a single set of standards, and I think that's true if that were in fact the case. And I think, and I'll go through this in some of my comments, I think there are more than one set of IFRS standards. And I'm not so much opposed to a single set of standards right now as opposed to kind of the timing of what this is all about. And I think convergence is the way to go, at least in the interim, and replacement of our standards is definitely not the way to go. Something said about roadmaps, and I'm reminded of Lewis Carroll's story where Alice is talking to the Cheshire Cat, and she's looking for direction, and the cat responds, "Well, that depends a good deal on where you want to go." And then she responds, "So long as I get somewhere." And I'm not sure that we know really at this point where we're trying to go with all of this. The United States has always been a leader in the financial reporting area. And it seems like that has been kind of reversed now, where we're starting to become the follower. We have a premier capital market, U.S. GAAP, GAS, whether it's PCAOB or GAS standards, they are the gold standard. I can tell you as a state board member, we get a lot of people that apply to become CPAs that aren't even citizens of this country. And they come in and they take the CPA exam, and that is the credential that they use in their country. They never intend to come to the United States to practice, but that's how well recognized our standards are. But I want to share with you some of my reservations about this entire area. One of the things that I'm concerned with is that the IASB has no direct regulatory oversight, unlike the SEC in this country that has oversight with the FASB. I think there's questions about the financial independence of the IASB. I think their funding is uncertain. It comes from a small number of private donors, some of the large firms, some large corporations, governmental bodies. I think there's questions about their political independence. The pure IFRS standards have to go through an endorsement process. And just to illustrate that, in the New York Times this morning, there was an article in the business section that I thought I would share with you. There's a new chair, Gerrit Zalm, that's been from Netherlands, been appointed as the chair of the foundation of the IASB that is the governing body. And just a couple quick quotes out of here. They've come under considerable pressure in Europe from some politicians who think the board should be more accountable to governments and should pay more attention to their opinions in setting accounting standards. International accounting standards are gaining acceptance in many countries in the world, although in some cases governments have ordered exceptions. For example, the European Commission, acting at the behest of French banks, decided that European countries or companies could ignore part of one standard dealing with derivatives, and said that the standards board should find a way to work out a compromise that should satisfy the banks. Well, is that where we really want to go? As I said, there's a lot of different versions of IFRS. I think it's an illusion to say that there is just a single IFRS. Our U.S. GAAP has grown up in an environment of the U.S. legal system, as well as the other standards that we deal with, like independence and ethics. And that isn't the case with IFRS. And we have a lot of years of experience behind us in dealing with U.S. GAAP, as opposed to, I mean, companies have really been only filing IFRS for the last, since 2005, as I understand it. Aside from all of that, there's also the implementation aspect of dealing with IFRS. We maybe assume that other people around the world have our same training, educational standards, and that isn't necessarily the case. In a good part of the world, the minimum requirement to enter our profession is more based on an apprenticeship concept. And so I think what I've tried to articulate anyway is that I think there's another side of this issue at some level that really needs to be examined. And I feel like we've kind of committed ourselves to this whole proposition of going down this path. And I respectfully just wanted to voice that opinion today.
Thanks, Gail. Let me just butt in here for a second. It may be sometimes hard to divide the accounting issues from the auditing issues, and just want to make sure that we can appreciate what you believe the auditing implications are with regard to these issues as we continue this discussion. Since I've interrupted the conversation, I just want to point out that unfortunately several of our colleagues from the SEC won't be able to join us this afternoon. Conrad and John and Julie will be have to depart around lunchtime. And so I just wanted to pause for a moment just to recognize that and see, Conrad, if you or your colleagues had any input you wanted to
make. Well, thank you, Ray. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning from all of us at the SEC. You've had excellent discussion on the XBRL and the I4US and some of the implications are in the future. I just want to touch on the XBRL because John mentioned it, and I just want to add a footnote to it, if I may. We at the SEC think the XBRL is a technology tool of interactive data, and as a result, we have created a new office of interactive disclosure within the SEC, because we feel very strongly that for the investor, for the capital markets in the United States and throughout the world, XBRL is really a very important tool. David Blaskowski is the new director. He comes from S&P, where he had been there for about 10, 12 years. He'll eventually have a full-time staff of 12 people scattered throughout the SEC to help the user, the preparer, and the investor in various segments of the SEC world to help them move on with the XBRL project. So right now we have 4 full-time people devoted to XBRL within the SEC, and that will be expanded in a couple months as we move forward. The XBRL has been fully developed as of September 24th, approximately 16,000 taxonomies across 10 various industries. We had a lot of help from the volunteers and the major firms, and FASB in particular is now reviewing that in accordance with GAAP on the taxonomies, and we at the SEC will be doing the same thing to ensure that the taxonomy is GAAP where it has to be. So that's kind of it on the XBRL. The other point on the I4US is that, as you know, we have the proposing release and the concept release. They're not exactly related. They may be somewhat related. We've received over 125 comment letters on the proposing release, and we're analyzing, reviewing, and summarizing those to see where we're going with that. I really think that if we need to keep the U.S. capital markets very competitive, the economy in the world has changed in the last 5 years, 10 years, dramatically. There are over 50 capital markets throughout the world that compete with our markets. And part of this relates to international accounting, international rules of independence, international auditing. So my thinking is, you know, the convergence of international, we at the SEC would like to see one gold standard someday that everybody can rely upon within the world economy. That's going to be a long ways off, but we're working towards that goal. I also believe personally that, and you mentioned it this morning somewhat, a couple times, that the auditing world has to be converged someday, the auditing standards. It'd be a much difficult process than those of the accounting standards. And then the third part I see that as I become involved with our review of our independent rules at the SEC and elsewhere, that worldwide convergence of independent rules needs to be done. There are just too many players that the practitioner cannot comply with and understand. So those are some of my thoughts that I have to share with you this morning. John?
You covered it.
Good morning. I don't often get to attend, so I'll take the opportunity since Tom invited. I'll just relay one observation with respect to the foreign issuer proposal, and that is sometimes I think people have the impression that what the effect of this is to the SEC requiring something or other or eliminating the requirement of something for other. I mean, at its core, we give foreign issuers right now two choices for how to report, either prepare statements in U.S. GAAP, which, you know, Bob Kipper's alluded to some of his clients doing that, or choice number two is, which is kind of also maybe somewhat of an American-type choice, style choice, but, you know, reconcile home country statements to U.S. GAAP. And what we're proposing to do, the commission proposing to do, is add a third choice to the menu, if you will, which is, you know, allow IFRS as published by the ISB financial statements. But we've observed that some of our foreign issuers today who are in capital markets at home that have moved to IFRS, and ostensibly they have IFRS statements in their back pocket, don't file them with us. They continue to file. They continue to take choice one off our menu, existing menu, and file U.S. GAAP financial statements. So I think the interesting question will be, if the commission were to move ahead, what will the market reaction be to the third choice being available? And also, that third choice doesn't say anything about the process and procedures that companies or auditors should use to make sure that the IFRS financial statements would be done well. So sometimes I hear, well, you know, if you remove the reconciliation requirement implicitly by adding the third choice, you know, the quality of the statements that are filed will be worse. And I try to diagram that and say, well, the quality is going to be in the hands of those preparing and auditing them. And if there are procedures that they think are appropriate to make them as high quality as they need to be, why would those procedures all go out the window, you know, just under choice three versus choice two? I mean, if, for example, looking at what U.S. GAAP would call for in the accounting in a certain area to triage and get a sense of whether the IFRS accounting makes sense or is done properly, if that's the most efficient way for a company or an auditor to triage it, why wouldn't they continue for their own internal purposes to do it? So I think one thing just to keep in mind is that it's adding a choice for issuers, and you can debate, and the comment letters came in and certainly gave us insight on whether it would be wise to add such a choice, but it is a choice, and then whether the market takes that choice, you know, is a separate question, as opposed to sometimes it's viewed as the SEC is driving a particular, you know, is driving people to that third alternative. I think whether a company goes to that third alternative, you know, it's going to be a function of whether they think their investors understand IFRS or are willing to learn IFRS or would not, you know, require a premium in such that, you know, it wouldn't be worth it anymore. So I just think that's sort of maybe more the economic context of this issue, and it's probably hopefully a useful backdrop to then considering some of the implementation matters like you've discussed today.
Thank you, Con and Julie, for your comments. Joe Carcello?
I have a couple of things to say. First, I want to thank Galen for his extremely articulate explanation of his concerns. I would encourage everyone in this room to read his comment letter. I think it is one of the best I've read a lot of these comment letters. I think it's one of the best comment letters I've read. And one of the things that he points out in his comment letter is that for the U.S. adopting IFRS would be tantamount to handing foreign parliaments a significant political role in our standard-setting process. I really wonder, when the American public finds this out, how happy they're going to be to turn over the safety of their 401k plans over to the European Union. I think you should send this comment letter to some of the people who are running for president. Julie talks about choices exist, and all the SEC would be doing here is providing choices. My argument back, Julie, would be choices exist in the absence of a regulator. Regulators exist to narrow choices, not to create choices. And as I told John last night, I'm going to pick on him so he doesn't feel unloved. John gave a speech to the PLI conference in New York on May 2nd. And essentially John's argument is he talks about if U.S. companies could choose between U.S. GAAP and IFRS, John stated that, and now I quote, market forces may well be the driver leading companies to select one accounting system over another, end of quote. Market forces may work if a firm's owners, stockholders, truly control the corporation, as evidenced by their ability to meaningfully elect individuals as directors who will represent their interest. Unfortunately, the prospects of meaningful shareholder proxy access looks bleak at the SEC, given the departure of Campos and the forthcoming departure of Nazareth. Without meaningful shareholder access, too many boards defer to top management preferences, and too many management teams run the corporation for their own benefit. And to paraphrase Herb Simon, they only seek to satisfy in terms of corporate performance. Given this environment, a true market test does not exist. Rather, we have a rigged market, one where the accounting principles selected might be chosen to maximize management flexibility in managing income. And, Tom, I'll tie this into auditing. What is the auditing issue here? If the SEC does allow U.S. corporations to choose U.S. GAAP or IFRS, I would suggest that those that choose IFRS may be choosing IFRS because it provides greater flexibility in the ability to manage income, which in my view poses higher risk to audit quality and financial reporting quality.
Julie Earhart?
Sorry, I didn't turn my card up. Just one comment just to clarify. When I said the effect of, or the, you know, the essence of the proposal is to add a choice, but I agree a job of regulators to limit choices so we have the right level of quality, but I would say it's to add a choice under the assumption, and people can dispute the judgment, but under the assumption that the choice you're adding meets a minimum level of acceptability. Now, I absolutely take the points, and that's why the proposal goes out, that people may say you're screwed up because the choice you've added doesn't meet the minimum level of acceptability, and ergo, you shouldn't do it. But my comments weren't to imply that a regulator should add choices ad nauseum. It's assuming it's within, you know, the acceptable range. So, but I take the point. People may think it's not within the acceptable range. That's the flaw. That's certainly a point that people feel free to, you know, have that point of view.
Bob Kippers, you'll have the final comment before we take a break for lunch.
Okay, I know we're up against lunch, but to answer your questions about amendments that might be needed to your standards, there are a few areas that would, maybe this is obvious and a little too technical, but the reporting standards need some repairs and maintenance because they are presuppose U.S. GAAP. And so you'd have to make certain changes, including AU 534 and certain sections. I mean, but beyond the reporting standards, just want to remind people that IFRS has disclosure guidance for going concern, which U.S. GAAP does not. If, as might be expected, the FASB adds that to U.S. GAAP, then the standard ongoing concern would have to be rethought because that has like a 1 year. IFRS is more flexible than the 1 year, and that might cause you to have to reconsider something around going concern. But I think the biggest issue with auditing standards is the one I don't know have a solution for, and that's the extent that audit reports in many places under your standards refer to financial statements prepared in accordance with IFRS, you know, which version? You know, as promulgated, EU version, EU version as applied in Spain. I don't know. I'm just saying that the confusion around a reference to IFRS when we do have this so-called jurisdictional difference, I think could lead to potential user confusion about what that audit report is really attesting to.
Okay, thank you. We will now break for lunch and resume this discussion at 1 o'clock. There is lunch for the members of the SAG, the official observers, and PCAOB staff upstairs. Thank you.